This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you. Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real life store stage, all the way to the, hey Marge, did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Running a growing business means getting the insights you need wherever you are. With Shopify's single dashboard, you can manage orders, shipping, and payments from anywhere. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy. This is iFanboy Pick of the Week 786, brought to you by iFanboy listeners just like you who are washing their hands, wearing their masks, getting vaccinated, doing all the things you still need to do wherever you are.
I am woman, hear me roar, in numbers too big to ignore, and I know too much to go back and pretend, 'cause I've heard it all before, and I've been down there on the floor.
My fanboy Pick of the Week episode 786. My name is Connor Kilpatrick, and sitting in for Josh Flanagan is Ryan Haupt.
Hi, everybody.
Josh is a man in his 40s who's gone mountain biking for the weekend. So Ryan may be the new permanent co-host, depending on how badly Josh crashes.
I mean, he can do the
crashes.
Show from in traction. True. Right? Do they still do traction? Is that a thing? It's just as long as he's wearing his helmet and doesn't take too big a hit to the head, I think right. He can still do the show.
I don't want him to get hurt, but I do want to see him in traction. Only because I think it would be funny.
Sure.
Like, I don't want him to hurt to get to that point. Just somebody put him in traction. I just want to see how he'd react. That's all.
Especially since I truly don't think they do traction anymore. So it would also be, it'd be like, oh, well, you know, when anybody comes in with a broken leg and on their forms it says that they have a record player, we just go ahead and put them in traction because we figure they're into that stuff.
Or an iron lung. Well, I don't know if it's sure. those either, but.
Seems like a weird treatment for a broken leg, but, you know, whatever it takes, there's a respiratory virus going around.
I'm going to be very careful here and put you in an iron lung. Okay. We are iFanboy, and everyone can read a bunch of comics. One of us picks the one they like the best, call it the pick of the week. We talk about that book. We talk about other books. We talk about the patron pick. We answer some listener mail if we have time. We often don't have time, but that's just the way it goes. Anyway, we have fun, and here's a spoiler warning. This is a review show. There'll be some spoilers. This week, hey, Ryan has the pick.
Yeah, it was offered to me. My week got a little out of control, but as I said to Connor, winners always want the ball, so I said, hell yeah, I'll take the pick, and I have pick-aid after a lot of reading, a lot of consideration. It was an easy pick in that it was the clear standout, but it wasn't easy in a week of strong books. A lot of good stuff, but once I finished it, the clear standout was Fantastic Four Life Story number 2. This is the decade of the Fantastic Four taking place in the 1970s.
We talked about this series, but they did a Spider-Man one by Chip Zdarsky where each issue takes place across a decade of the life of the characters. So this is a book where the characters age in real time. I don't know if it's that clear in this Fantastic Four book as it was in the Spider-Man book, but I'm not surprised this was the pick for a scientist such as yourself because there's a lot of ethical science quandaries going on in this series.
Yes, and this was written by Mark Russell, iFanboy favorite, I think it's safe to say. Mm-hmm. Artist is Sean Isaacase. How would you say that?
According to his Twitter account, it's Sean Isaacs.
Okay, Isaacs. Mm-hmm. Colors by Nolan Woodward and letters by VC's Joe Caramanga. Yep. Magna? I still mess this up too.
Manya.
Joe Caramanga.
Joey Donuts.
And yeah, the art was super strong.
Really
it's
great
covering
art.
It's covering a period in the Fantastic Four's life that is sort of synced up with my own in some kind of cool ways. So it was a fun family drama in that sense. I liked it towed the line nicely between making it sort of a Marvel, like the whole Marvel universe in the 70s, as opposed to just focusing on the Fantastic Four. Like there's cameos from Hank Pym, there's cameos from Tony Stark. But then the main character that's introduced in this chapter is Victor Von Doom and Namor, the Submariner, as well as some other favorites. And basically what happened is in this version of the Fantastic Four, when the cosmic radiation hit the spaceship that they were all in, Reed got a vision of Galactus. Right. And in that vision, Galactus not only was presented to Reed, but now Galactus knows about Earth. So it was like a two-way vision.
Right.
And he has become a man obsessed with figuring out a plan to take down Galactus when Galactus comes to Earth at the expense of basically every relationship in his life.
Well, it's almost like a climate change metaphor, right? It's like they keep facing problems and he's like, none of this matters because Galactus is coming.
Right.
And Reed becomes a bit of a crank in that sense to the rest of the world because he's this guy who's screaming about this alien that's coming to kill them. Well, no one else has had the vision and there's no other evidence this guy even exists. So to everyone else, he's kind of this lunatic. There's a really sad bit in the beginning where he's giving a talk at the Stark Industries Symposium, I guess. How will the world end? And there's like five people there.
I've given that talk.
They make fun of him as this guy obsessed with Galactus.
You know, or he just got the 8 a.m. talk slot on a Friday. And at a big conference, you're just not going to get a lot of people in the room for that. It's a real shame, but that's what happens sometimes.
The first issue was all about the tension between Ben and the team. And if I have any criticism of this book, it seems to have gone away completely and there's no sort of reference to it. Now, a lot can happen in a decade, but all of a sudden he's just sort of buddies with them again. And so this issue is all about the tension with Sue and Reed.
Right.
In the backdrop of the feminist movement in the 70s and Betty Friedan and the feminine mystique. And enter, at the worst possible moment, sexy, Speedo-clad Namor into that mix.
So I think that page where Namor shows up was probably when I realized this is probably going to be the pick. Because he struts out of the ocean, goes to the library, says, it's okay, I'm local, and then sits down to read Rachel Carson's Silent Spring, which was a book all about, you know, it's kind of the book that alerted people to the problems of pollution in the water and DDT, you know, destroying the bald eagle population, all these other things. So a very important environmental book. And at the same time, Sue Storm is at an Equal Rights Amendment rally, an amendment that the United States still has yet to pass. And this book is set in the 70s. And it's sort of Reed expecting her to, like, do all the housework and take care of the kid and be invisible on the team. Like, the metaphor is very well done.
And to be fair, it's a metaphor from the beginning of the characters. I mean, that's why she was the Invisible Woman. She was, you know, sort of lost. And that was something that, you know, Kirby and Lee did way back in the 60s.
Then what I really loved is they go to Arecibo, the giant observatory in Puerto Rico, where 006 dies in Goldeneye.
Yep.
And meet they don't name him as Carl Sagan, but it's basically Carl Sagan.
Yeah.
And he's working, which Mark Russell, clearly a Carl Sagan fan, because there was a Carl Sagan type person in the Flintstones book as well, at the Cave of Science.
Who isn't, though?
It's true. He's a pretty easy guy.
Turtlenecks, blazers.
Right. Just smoking a lot of weed.
Aliens. Yeah.
So he shows Reed the golden plaque in this version of history, and in our real version of history, it was a golden disc, and he's sending it out on the Pioneer probe. We sent ours out on the Voyager probe.
Yep.
But it's the same sort of idea. It's basically a message to the cosmos. Hey, we're here. In all likelihood, it'll be one of the few artifacts of humanity that survives essentially forever. You know, when the Earth is completely reworked, the crust and no evidence of human civilization exists, that disc will be out there with some recordings of whales. So that's nice. And yeah, I just thought it was really well done. I liked how it moved the story. I liked that it took some pretty bold choices. And I think we already said this, but I'll reiterate, spoiler warning, by the end of the book, Sue has left Reed for Namor.
Right.
And their relationship is over. And there's no Valeria Richards. It's just her and Franklin living with Namor by the beach. And Reed is living with Ben and sort of reverting to bachelor lifestyle. And it ends with a hint that Galactus might finally be arriving in the 1980s.
You know, there's a lot here. I mean, I love the Doom aspect where he comes in. He's not a college friend. He's a guy that shows up after Reed is established as a scientist. He's almost like an Iago character. He's manipulating Reed's worst impulses to become a workaholic and ignore his family, all in the service of and Reed's idea of saving humanity, and Doom has his own ideas, obviously, why he wants Reed to be working all the time. And then here, Doom goes full heel turn and attacks all the heroes. That was a fun bit, too. There was a lot of great stuff going on in this issue. But, you know, it's primarily a Sue issue. And as she sort of realizes, this is not the life for me. She's not even on the missions anymore. The joke is,
yeah,
she's there, but she's invisible, so you can't see her. But she's not actually there. She's home taking care of the kids. It's like, oh, she's right here. She's invisible. You know, so this is not what she wants to do with her life anymore. And, you know, in the past, she reading her, getting an argument about it. He makes up for it for a little while, and then they move on. But here she just says, nope, I'm out, and goes to live with Namor.
That's the good thing about these sort of alternate history versions of the comics, is that they can never do this story in the main continuity because Sue can't ever leave Reed.
I mean, she might for a little while, a couple issues. And she certainly had a relationship with Namor in the comics, but, you know, or a flirtation anyway. This can be much more final, for sure.
And there's some hints that Franklin might have, like, sort of an interesting heel turn.
Sure.
In the next chapter. So there's just, this was the one book I read this week where I really felt like, oh man, I just want the next issue right away.
That was a good one.
And so that was why it got the nod.
Poor buffoonish Hank Pym and his radioactive ants. I was like, who's this buffoon? Oh, it's Hank Pym. Ben Grimm's guest starring on Bonanza. There's all the little nice touches that go on throughout here that Mark Russell's really good at.
It is chock full of 1970s Easter eggs, which I enjoyed. I was not alive in the 1970s, but still a fan of the decade. Enjoyed all the little nods that I personally caught. I'm sure I missed plenty.
Plus Cap in Vietnam, we see briefly.
But he's in Vietnam attacking the American soldiers.
Right, because they're committing war crimes.
Yeah.
And then ladies love Namor.
And Namor's kind of a woke dude, especially for the 1970s. I mean, he's saying, like, you know, when we go to testify at the UN, Sue, why don't you take the podium and make the speech? Because, you know, we're going to start with T'Challa, and Black Panther's going to say his piece, but we need somebody else to step up. And, you know, women are half the population, so you should be the one to do it. And she's immediately like, okay, all right, Namor.
Breath of fresh air.
How about that? Not wearing very many clothes either.
No, he's very fit. This has been good. This has been very good. I'm looking forward to more of this.
Yeah, me too. So do we know how many issues this is going for?
I don't know. I assume it's the same length as Spider-Man, which I think was 6.
Okay.
But who knows? You know, I take everything with a grain of salt. This week, we also had Checkmate number 1. Brian Michael Bendis, Alex Maleev, Dave Stewart, Josh Reed. And this is a 6-issue miniseries restarting Checkmate, spilling out of the events of Event Leviathan, which I think was 10 years ago. I don't remember when it came out. But it didn't matter because this was a ton of fun. And, you know, Bendis has been bouncing around the DC universe trying to find his natural fit. He did a great year of Superman, then he did a bad year of Superman. He's on Justice League now, which I really enjoy. But he seems to really fit in with this strange corner of DC in which we have all the sort of morally gray spy characters, plus like Green Arrow and Damian.
I assume you read all of the Checkmate book for the Greg Rucka era.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Okay. But this doesn't seem to be like a natural progression of that same story.
It seems to
basically just be there's going to be a new organization that's going to go by Checkmate.
Yes. So, you know, in Leviathan, all the DC spy agencies, Checkmate and Argus and Spiral, everybody was destroyed. And so here we have this ragtag group of characters, Manhunter and Green Arrow and The Question and Bones from DEO, which was also destroyed, Steve Trevor and Lois Lane and King, and also Robin and Talia, restarting a group that they're going to call Checkmate. So it's a new era for Checkmate. These are all really fun characters, and they're all really fun together in a room, which is, you know, Bendis' strength. There was a great moment here where Lois Lane's back at the planet and one of her coworkers, you know, comes to give her a gift, and they have a very awkward and weird conversation, and you're just like, what the hell is happening? And then they do that great turn where you suddenly realize that this sort of dowdy middle-aged woman who works in production is actually an agent of Leviathan. And it got really bone-chilling. I thought that was a great sequence.
It was super effective.
Yeah. It was just like, oh, you can sort of feel the chill go down your spine when you realize, oh, Lois Lane's actually in danger right now.
There's a moment where she says something like, are you the snowman's ticket? And I think, was that supposed to be like a code phrase?
I guess. Yeah.
It took me a moment of like, why would Lois say that? But then, yeah, it becomes clear that this person has far more nefarious purposes than just talking. Because it all was like, you know, oh, you know, when I found out about Clark, it was nice to know that I wasn't the only person at the Daily Planet with secrets.
Right.
Which could mean anything.
Sure, everyone's got secrets.
You know, Yeah, but then it took – oh, it was good. That was very well done. I also really liked Robin constantly trying to arrest Manhunter from his bubble.
Maleev is perfect for a book like this. This is a gritty street-level book, and he's a gritty street-level artist. It's a look and feel you don't get from other DC books. This is not the DC House style, thank God. He and Bendis have a chemistry together that works really well. There's a lot of medium close-ups of characters talking. He does it in a dynamic way. Was I the only one that thought that King looked kind of like a young David Bowie?
I can see that.
In certain spots. Not like aping it, but just in certain sort of his vibe.
Yeah, I can see that. And David Bowie, the man bun.
Yeah, I'm just happy that they didn't abandon this story entirely. Because I really liked it when it was Leviathan. I really liked it. It was Pickle at least at once. I'm looking forward to more of this.
My quibble, I have a quibble, is the big double page spread where it's everybody just standing around talking.
Yep.
And it has like Manhunter, Superhero, Green Arrow, Master Marksman. And they all have different chess pieces associated with them. But something I loved about the original Checkmate book was people weren't just associated with a chess piece. They had a specific title that was were the White Knight. They were the White Bishop. They were, you know, and the bishops were like the intelligence gatherers and the rooks were the tanks and the knights were the, you know, in the field operatives.
Well,
and
they had a whole organization.
This as like a way to organize a spy agency.
Yeah.
And maybe it'll build to that. But I'm anxious to get to that, you know, I'm anxious to get to the place where everybody's getting assigned their sort of title role based on the chessboard within the organization.
Yeah. I mean, they had a whole organization. Like this is the beginnings of a new one. I love that too. And I hope that we get back to that. I think we should get back these agencies. They should have been gone for a little while, you know, either deal with Leviathan or don't, but let's not leave that gaping hole in the DCU, which is all these spy agencies, which are so great.
Yeah. The Leviathan piece of it. Other than the creepiness factor of it being sort of like a Fight Club-esque, anybody could be in this sort of thing.
Right.
I'm not that invested in the Leviathan end of the story. I would be happy to watch this group of characters reform Checkmate to face any threat.
Right.
I just kind of like them coming together as a group. So I think that's where the book really sings for me.
I hope by the end of issue 6, we do have some sort of Checkmate organization.
Me too.
This week we had Batman Superman 19 just as the book was announced as canceled. So that's fun.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's no good.
Listen, if there's a vaguely fringy book that we talk about in the show and rave over, there's a good chance it'll get canceled. And with Batman Superman, that is the case. It's unfortunate because Gene Luen Yang has really found his footing with it. What I found really funny about this issue, and we're still continuing on the storyline in which this cosmic character has unfurled these film strips of different multiverses and characters are going back and forth. It's a great device, but I saw the cover. It's a bunch of Western versions of the Batman Superman. And then I saw Yang's name and I saw Lupacino's name. And I didn't really look any further than that. I was like, oh, Lupacino's drawing. That's too bad because I like her a lot, but it had been Ivan Reis. And I thought, terrific job so far. So I'm reading this. I'm reading it. And I'm like, okay, Lupacino, got it. And then at a certain point, the story changes. And I thought, wow, that's a weird style. She's almost like, looks like Steve Lieber a little bit there. And then I kept going. And then I was like, no, she's kind of doing Derek Robertson. Wow. And then I got like three pages into Derek Robertson bit, and I was like, this is Derek Robertson. What? And then the problem is that the credits page wasn't until the end. So I didn't realize that it was a different artist each segment. But I was really impressed for a minute. I thought she was doing a lot of really different styles. I'm an idiot. Talk about this book.
No, I mean, I don't blame you for thinking that. So I haven't had a chance to talk about this book on the show since Gene Luen Yang took over. And I love the high concept here that there's like this, like you said, a cosmic being that is able to rearrange reality in the form of film strips. And then he can edit them. He can swap out frames. He can transfer things between the realities of the film. So we've got like our DC universe of Batman and Superman who are fighting against him, while also the alternate universe versions of the Batman and Superman are jumping between realities and trying to figure out what's going on. And it's incredibly meta. It takes an almost Neil Gaiman, Neil Stevenson, the great Neil author twists towards the end when we find out that the cosmic being is an actual like deity of storytelling that lost his power because everyone forgot about him and then regained his power in the internet age. And yeah, I love the high concept. I love the characterizations of old-timey Batman juxtaposed to modern Batman and old-timey Superman juxtaposed to modern Superman. I love that Robin is obsessed with the trigonometry homework. That is a great that is a great pull. If you remember the Adam West Burt Ward show, Robin was often worried about his trigonometry homework, so that's fantastic. Yeah, I'm having a lot of fun with this. And this particular issue, I was expecting to get an issue that was mostly a Western, but it really went into some crazy, wacky, cosmic
The second bit, they go to Ran, and they all have jetpacks like Adam Strange, and Robin's like, fucking cool, I got a jetpack. And the Western bit's only sort of, it's probably half the issue, maybe. I don't know exactly how many, but it's a good bit. And that bit's fun. That's the bit Derek Robinson draws. Yeah. Steve Lieber draws the part on Ron. I did find myself really missing Ivan Reese, and it's not because Emanuele Lupacino, Steve Lieber, and Derek Robertson, Kyle Hotz are bad artists. They're not. They're all really good artists. But he does such a great job with the look and feel of the book and the costumes, especially. You know, the old-timey costumes are sort of all over the place in this issue, and Ivan Reese established a really interesting look for them. And so it's kind of a bummer that he didn't get to finish the arc off. I'm not going to try to be too upset about the book being canceled. I am bummed about it, but I'm really enjoying this arc, and I think this is going to be a really terrific arc when it's all said and done.
Yeah, I would definitely. The first issue of this arc, I had a hard time getting through just because it's that two parallel stories going one on the top, one on the bottom. But once I got past that point where they started to merge, it's done nothing but sing for me since then. So I'm happy with it.
We'll have to start calling him Neil Lewin Yang now.
He's of the great cosmic Neils.
Yes.
Infinite Frontier number one, story by Joshua Williamson, art by Germanico. Is that how we're saying that?
Oh, it's either Germanico or Germanico. I don't know. It depends on how the X is pronounced.
Colors by Romulo Fajardo Jr. and letters by Tom Napolitano. I didn't include this on my list. Did I include this on my list
no,
of books
I didn't.
To you, or did you add
I
this
added
one?
It, yeah.
Yeah. But I read it. I read it.
I really like this. I just realized I conflated two scenes, because in this scene, Bones goes to, what was her name? Chase?
Paris.
Well, it was Chase, though, right? That's who it was. Yeah, Chase. She was the agent of the DEO. And he goes to her to sort of restart the DEO. And I thought that, for some reason, in my head, that was a scene in Checkmate. It doesn't matter. Anyway, coming out of that Infinite whatever event, whatever was it Infinite Frontier? Infinite Frontier is what it is called. I lose track of what those, it was the event that happened. And then there was the thing that came out of that. I think Infinite Frontier is the thing that came out of that.
Now, anytime a DC book has metal in it, I don't read it. And therefore, I pick up other books where I'm confused.
Right. So this is, I assume, a six-issue miniseries sort of taking a look at where DC's multiverse is now. And it features a bunch of characters who are sort of lost to time. And so it opens up with the Thomas Wayne version of Batman from Flashpoint crash landing on Earth 23, which is the Earth with President Superman. And so the black version of Ma and Pa can't find him. And they're like, well, this isn't Batman.
The Ellises.
And so we find, you know, then a major character is Alan Scott and his kids, Jade and Obsidian. Also, I guess Chase will be a major character for the DEO, Agent Chase. We have President Superman, which I just think is so ridiculous and awesome, along with his Justice Incarnate, which includes characters from all over the multiverse of Mary Marvel and Aquaman.
And they're just calling her Mary Marvel again.
Right.
Really, that's fine. It's not Kid Lady Shazam.
No, it's not. It's not character in the movie with no name. And then we got Barry Allen, who was supposed to, from the last special involving this, become like the multiverse Flash, and Wally was going to take over the Earth. So that may still be a thing. This is still Josh Williamson.
Why is Thomas Wayne Superman such a jerk?
Because he is just an asshole.
Yeah, but Thomas Wayne wasn't an asshole.
No, but Thomas Wayne in Flashpoint was. You read that.
I don't like it. I read it, but I don't like it.
And you saw the movie. Barry Allen finds the dead Quintessence, which happened in Metal. So now, like, all the major cosmic beings who oversaw everything, like Spectre and Phantom Stranger, they're all dead. And he can't sound the alarm because the Psycho Pirate subdues him, which is a big deal because the Psycho Pirate was the one who subdued him in Crisis on Infinite Earths, which led to his death. So they have a nice little reunion there that's bone-chilling. And then we end on a Roy Harper scene. Roy Harper had died in
that scene. I think I liked about that scene, and they did a version of this in Marvel when they collapsed the Ultimate Universe into 616, where there were a few people who like remembered bits and pieces of the Ultimate Universe, and like those people felt like they were insane because they were like, I don't remember the life that I'm supposed to be living, but I remember this different life. And they kind of did that here too, where there are people who remember the crisis event, and I love that stuff. I eat that stuff up. I love the idea. Sort of, it's almost that like Mandela effect, you know, the Berenstain Bears thing, where like I love the idea that everyone's has to share this same planet, but we have different experiences on it, and what happens when those experiences don't sync up? You know what I mean?
Right. And you're someone who remembers the multiverse and remembers Metal. Everyone else thinks you're a lunatic. And so there's this woman at the diner talking to her friends, like, I remember the sky was red. there was a multiverse, the Justice League saved us, they fixed everything, and they're like, okay, you're a crazy person. And then another guy's like, no, I remember too.
And then a third guy starts yelling at them, and that almost had like, you know, COVID vibes of like, yeah, the multiverse isn't real and we don't need to wear masks because the multiverse isn't a thing, you know. And it's Joshua Williamson did a very good job threading the needle of making this feel like a relevant situation that I would find myself in a diner in these United States in the year 2021, of just an angry person yelling at me for talking about reality. And then it ends on just a crazy weird note. So who's the character who busts into the diner?
I don't know who that is, but they're coming for Roy Harper, and he fights them off, only to find that he is now a White Lantern.
Wait, a White Lantern or a Black Lantern?
There's white power coming out of his ring. White energy. I assume it's a White Lantern. Maybe he's a Black Lantern. Does the Black Lantern's ring shoot out white?
Yeah, but I thought the Black Lantern was like the upside-down triangle with the little lines on top like a fist.
I can't remember everybody's logos.
That's the problem. That's why you shouldn't have so many different kinds of lanterns. Yeah, that's Black Lantern's sigil. But you're right, the energy.
Maybe he's a gray lantern.
His entire costume is black. Oh, no. What does it mean?
He's a gray lantern. So there's a lot going on here. It's sort of confusing, but it featured a lot of great characters. I thought terrific art from Zermenico. For a minute, I thought it was Lee Weeks. He's turned into a really very solid storytelling, dynamic action, great character work. I thought all of his characters looked terrific. You know, you got Roy Harper, Barry Allen, Alan Scott, a bunch of fun characters here. I don't know where this is going, but I'm excited to see. Like, DC is just such a mess. I should try to find any good I can find. Any guys, anywhere.
Yeah, I just kind of pick up books here and there. Every, you know, half the books are two different colors. I don't understand what's going on, but we'll get to that.
Quick break, talk about how you can support the show. Patreon.com/iFanboy. That's the main way listeners support the show. We are listener supported. As most, you know, non-corporate media is, relies on listeners to support us, and we appreciate that. The patrons don't just help the show, they also help you, the listener. They unlock content for you, or shows. They unlock shows for you, including the Talksplodes, the Booksplodes, the Mediasplodes. They're responsible for the YouTube content being uploaded. They added the patron pick to the show. They get to enjoy things like the monthly patron hangout and the Discord and the Facebook community. So there's a lot of fun things happening, and we do hope it make it worth it for you to become one. Not just support the show, but also fun for you. Our next stretch goal, we have the classic G.I. Joe cartoon, which we talked about, maybe replacing with a new stretch goal. We haven't really had a chance to talk about that yet. And then after that, of course, it's the quarterly barbecue video show return, which would be a logistical nightmare, but we'll do it if that's what we get to. If you're a patron, I hope you enjoy it. And if you're ever considered being one, we hope you take a shot. Even come in at a low level, see if it's worth your while. Maybe you'll become a patron. So patreon.com/ifanboy. ifanboy.threadless.com is where our t-shirts are. Fanboy logo, Herm, Pick a League podcast, ratings. If one is Electro, GDET, nothing makes something matters. And stay home and read comics. We have a new design idea. Josh was spearheading that campaign. Josh dropped the ball. So we have to pick it up and run with it and do it ourselves. So we'll get you a new shirt soon. We have the idea for it. It's just a matter of getting it designed. ifanboy.com/support. That's where you can help us out via PayPal directly. It's our, basically our tip jar. If you don't want to become a patron or buy a t-shirt, you just want to throw a couple dollars in the tip jar, that's where you can do it. And people do that. We do thank you for that. And finally, ifanboy.com/Amazon. That's where you can find a link to find the books that we talk about in our Booksplode shows, as well as a general Amazon link. And we thank everyone who does all of the above. Like I said, we're listener supported. That's how we pay the bills. That's how we make sure the show keeps coming out. That's how we justify the time away from our families. We do it because it's fun, and hope you do it because you enjoy the show. So thank you for everyone who has supported us. We are very appreciative. Very, very appreciative. Let's talk about Batman Reptilian, book one from DC Comics' Black Label. This is a book written by Garth Ennis that was meant to be drawn by Steve Dillon.
Yes.
Unfortunately, Steve Dillon passed away. Liam Sharp took it over, and Liam Sharp could not have a more different style than Steve Dillon.
Yeah.
There was a bit of a spirit of Steve Dillon in some of the character work, but this was very much a book that looked like it could have been drawn by Bill Sienkiewicz or Dave McKean.
Super reminiscent of, Batman Arkham Asylum.
Yep.
The book, not the games.
Right. I didn't, love it, but I really liked reading it. There were things about it I did like.
I had the same feeling. I in the back of my mind, this was, until I read it, this was in the running for, you know, keep this as an option for Pick of the Week. And then as I was reading it, I was like, it's not quite hitting the right, not firing on all cylinders for me.
I think because, you know, at the end of the day, Garth Ennis doesn't really care. You know, like, he doesn't really care about superheroes.
About superheroes. No, that's clear.
He manages to find joy in writing, like, The Punisher, you know, because that's superhero adjacent. But he still gets to tell war stories. And now that's out the window because of fucking assholes. So he's got to write a Batman story. And the thing is, like, he doesn't really care about Batman. I kind of can feel that in the book. Although I did like the idea that, and I don't know if this is in the script or this is just something that Liam Sharp did, but Batman's kind of a shadow the whole time. Like,
yeah, that was cool.
He's all black and you really can't see him that well. When he stands next to other people in costume, he's just sort of a silhouette. I like that. I mean, the art was just terrific to look at. This won't be everybody's cup of tea, but I did like looking at it more than I liked reading it. And I love Garth Ennis. I just don't think this is the book for him. Also, they seem to have cast Christopher Plummer as Alfred, which I thought was an interesting choice.
I couldn't quite figure out like why. Basically, the second half of the issue is just Batman intimidating this one low-level thug who has worked for various Batman villains over the years, and he's talking about a hired goon. And I couldn't figure out, like, why, Batman, why do you care so much about this one dude that you're going to, like, follow him home and creep him out while he's trying to sleep? And, like, it just seemed like a lot of effort from Batman for a guy who's not that worthwhile.
Right. Hey, look, maybe more things will happen, but... In the meantime, I didn't dislike it. I was like, okay, well, that was
by the end of issue one, it is not clear why the book is even titled what it is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's Batman Reptilian. There's a murder of some Batman villains that clearly seems to... It's confusing when you have, like, okay, so Batman has Killer Croc, who's a giant crocodile man, mm-hmm. and then Spider-Man has...
The Lizard.
The Lizard, who is a big reptile man, and I kept getting, like, the two kind of mentally mixed up while I was reading this, because I'm like, wait, are they going to reveal that there's a reptile man villain that Batman has that we never knew about? And somehow... Also, like, in my head canon, Connor, mm-hmm. I think Killer Croc beats... The Lizard, right?
Yeah, in a fight, for sure.
If they were to 1-1. So, yeah. So if you're going to tell me there's this scary reptile man out there, then don't put Killer Croc in your book, because I'm going to be thinking, like, well, Killer Croc could take that reptile man.
Well, I just assume this is Killer Croc.
It could be.
That's what I assume.
All right.
I mean, I don't know, but I assume that. But I don't know. I could be wrong.
Killer Croc is reptilian. It fits. It just isn't... I don't know. This wasn't where my head went. That seems like it would be too straightforward.
Well, we'll find out.
What do I know? I'm not Garth Ennis.
If you look at the variant covers in the back, I don't know if you have them or not, in the digital version they're there. It's a terrific Bill Sienkiewicz one where Batman's being choked mm-hmm. out by Killer Croc. And then there's another one by Cully Hamner that has all of the villains with X'd out eyes except for Killer Croc. So I just assume it's Killer Croc.
Oh, you might be right. We'll see.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
Okay, it's time. Go, go, Power Corner. It's corner time.
Oh no!
No!
You don't get your own corner. There's no Power Ranger corner. This is just a book.
Power corner, go. Oh, Mega God. Corner, activate.
Let me ask you a question. Power Rangers number 8 is the book we're going to talk about. But before you get to that, in your Hall of Fame of, I'm going to say IP because it's antiseptic. But if you're like fandoms. You know, you got your Star Wars or your Star Trek or your Harry Potter or your Game of Thrones or your DC or Marvel. Where does Power Rangers fall in that spectrum?
Close to the bottom of things I actually care about, but the degree to which it annoys you is delicious.
And that brings it up. I think that's only fair.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's not I really don't care about Power Rangers that much. It's actually a decent book. A decent series of books, yeah. Fleshing out a shared universe that I have, you know, the vague sense memories of childhood from. It's, you know, it's below a Ninja Turtles. I don't have a strong G.I. Joe. This is, you know, I don't have a strong G.I. Joe love.
Yeah.
But I would say, like, Power Rangers is, it's in the same category as, like, my Transformers and my Ninja Turtles, but it's probably closer to the bottom of those. And that's already pretty low on my totem pole of pop culture caring aboutness. So, all that said... Power Rangers number 8, written by Ryan Parrott, illustrated by Francesco Mortarino, and colored by Raul Angula, lettered by Ed Dukeshire. And this is continuing the story of Jason, Zach, and Trini, who are now Omega Rangers out working in space. So they're essentially like Green Lantern versions of the Power Rangers. They're meant to operate in deep space where it's pretty lawless and they've got to take care of things. Sure. But there's this new threat called the Imperial, who's sort of a Galactus-level planet-level threat, and they've recruited Dracon, who is an alternate universe. I've covered this before on the show. This is all review for people,
yeah, absolutely.
I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
They've recruited Dracon, who's an alternate universe version of Tommy the Green Ranger, who's evil, and they figured out a way to track the Imperials, and this part's actually kind of cool. So they figured out that they are tracking the Imperial, who's going to destroy this planet that is inhabited by like the Power Rangers version of the Viltrumites. They're an incredibly warlike planet. They've colonized all these other planets. They're very imperialistic. And the Rangers have to decide, do we go save this planet from being destroyed? Because do we save a planet that's about to be destroyed? Or do we let this planet be destroyed because they're actually kind of all bad people? They basically say to not act would not be fair, so they're going to go save this planet. And they find out that there is a faction of people on this planet who don't agree with what the Emperor is doing and are willing to fight against it, including his own queen. But in their rescue mission and in fighting this really powerful godlike being, the Imperial, they're only able to save like 30 some people before the entire planet is destroyed. So like it's a bunch of teenagers being like, man, we kind of might suck at being superheroes on this scale. And it was really good. And this team in particular, the Omega Rangers, there's only three of them. So they're actually down a Ranger right now. So there's hints that they might be recruiting somebody to take up that fourth Ranger spot. I've been really enjoying both this Power Rangers book and the Mighty Morphin book, the books that kind of split off on the Mighty Morphin is the Earth-based team and the Power Rangers book is the space-based team. And they're just fun. They're dumb. They're fun. I enjoy them. The art has been consistently very good. And the reason that, again, Connor, this review, people know this.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
The reason that Zach Trini and Jason are off on space doing their own thing is because those three actors left the show after the first season because of contract disputes. Sure, so they brought in three new Rangers. So now we're able to see kind of the story of what happened to those characters after they left the show canonically in a way that's just, it's just fun. It's dumb and fun.
You could have made all of that up and I would have known no different. So that's good. I'm glad you're enjoying it, though.
But I didn't. If I can make one thing apparent, it's that this is no stupider than any of the decades of superhero lore that we've stored in our brains over the years.
That's obviously a false statement.
Let's not actually self-examine how we feel about stories, these characters. Yeah, sure. All right, we'll leave that. We'll set that aside.
Wonder Woman Black and Gold, number one. So we had Batman Black and White, then we had Superman Red and Blue, and now we have Wonder Woman Black and Gold. This is an anthology book. I've talked about this before. Superman Red and Blue was stupid. They should have just done Superman Black and White. Or red. I said red is a highlight color. And so clearly someone DC heard me. Because this is Wonder Woman Black and White with yellow as a highlight color. And that actually works much better than Superman Red and Blue. Because they got a lot of liberties with that. They had some purple in there. They were full color pages. This is just highlight color. And it really works really well. And like any anthology, you know, there's some good and there's some bad. There's some boring stories here. But there was a really, really good one that I want to highlight. If I may, written by John Arcudi.
The Ryan Sook one?
Yeah, drawn by Ryan Sook, which was Wonder Woman in World War II, where she is on patrol with a platoon, and one of the guys is flirting with her, and then they get shot by a tank, and you think he's just toast, because they blow up, and she smashes the tank, and she's doing this little mournful thinking, and then we follow her life after the war, and really great double-page spread with Justice League and the Satellite, even though it's not the Satellite era Justice League, but still. Strange, but I don't know why she was in front of the Wayne mausoleum, but
it might have been just the same cemetery. But I'm just gonna go on a limb. I don't know if anyone's ever said this before. I think Ryan Sook can draw real good.
He's incredible. And then we see the guy didn't die. She carried his mangled body back to the HQ, and they patched him up. He lost a leg. Or he lost an arm and a leg too. And eventually ran for Senate and then, died of old age. And so she's visiting his grave at the cemetery, leaving him a flower. It was just a really sweet story that was drawn just wonderfully. Really wonderful.
Yeah, it was fantastic. And sort of the framing device is Batman is questioning her loyalty to the Justice League, which that part I was just like, well, I don't think, like, I'm not sure Batman would.
Well, the idea is that she's meeting. He's basically saying, are you or are you not immortal? And if you are immortal, then we're basically just a speck in your lifespan. So how loyal to us can you actually be? Is this out of character? Yes. Is it interesting? Also, yes.
Yes, it's an interesting character point to bring up. I just don't know why it was a weird Batman interrogating her in the middle of like a big Justice League meeting when they're all sitting there. Like, what had she done that that meant that Batman was like, now hang on a second. And I don't know. I just feel like whenever Batman is like trying to get harsh with Wonder Woman, there's always a subtext of just like, and are you down?
Right.
Like, so, do you want to do this?
And so we learn that she is in fact loyal because the whole time she is going to the grave of this man she fought with very, very briefly in World War II. I thought this was a terrific story. And that was the next one I liked a lot too. The Amy Reeder, Gabriella Downey one. That had terrific art. Really great use of the color. They should have just done Superman Black and Red. That I think maybe they learned from that, because this is a much better looking book than Superman Red and Blue. next month or whenever we have a Jamie McKelvey drawn story. So that's exciting.
Yeah, that'll be fun. Star Wars Corner.
A
much less important corner than Power Rangers Corner, but
they don't have their own corner.
They do. It's the Mighty Morphin Power Corner.
Sure.
Star Wars Darth Vader, number 13. This is written by Greg Pak, art by Raffaele Iñeco, colorist Jason Keith, and letterer VCs Joe Carmanga. I still can't do it. I'll keep practicing. I'll keep practicing. So I've been reading this book since issue one. Greg Pak's, I think, doing a fantastic job. It lost a little steam at the end of the last arc because Darth Vader goes to Exegol, which apparently is a planet that exists in the final film of the Skywalker saga that I saw once and have no interest in revisiting. So, you know, he now like believes that Emperor Palpatine has a plan, which that movie certainly didn't make clear. But now they're in this crossover event called the War of the Bounty Hunters. I actually thought the previous issue, issue 12, was a little bit, it was the preview issue of War of the Bounty Hunters. Mm-hmm. And I thought it lost a lot of momentum to the point where like I almost didn't pick up this issue.
Wow.
But I was like, I'll give it one more shot. And I checked it out. And it's basically just a long fight between Darth Vader and IG-88. And that's just good old fashioned fun.
So are you excited for, I mean, you've heard the angst that Josh has had over War of the Bounty Hunters, the 85 part crossover event. Are you excited for it? Are you weary of it? What are your
thoughts? I think at this point I am content to just read this book, Star Wars Darth Vader. And this is basically the only Star Wars book that I'm up to date on and still interested in reading, and I'm okay with that.
All right, that's fine.
I'm just not going to bother.
You're not going to dip into any of the specials, the IG-88 special, the Dengar special, none of those? Just you don't have to. I'm just curious.
If they hit me on the right week, I will. But I think there's something about Darth Vader, for whatever reason, Darth Vader as a character works in the comics for me better than the main cast members who are human. So I think it definitely has something to do with the art, right? Artists are really good at drawing Darth Vader. Yeah. They're not as good at drawing
people
post Empire Strikes Back Mark Hamill. Like, you know, like it's, that's just a fact of, right, of one being a robot face and the other being a man's face. So I think the art consistently works better. One thing that they do, you know, Kieran did this when he was writing the book, is they have to introduce a previously non-canonical sidekick to Darth Vader, because Darth Vader just isn't a vocal or dynamic enough character to carry a book themselves.
No, he's not.
So that was where we got Dr. Aphra. Now he's working with an assassin named Ochi, who's got a cool character design. And basically that's the character that talks, right? They're the ones that say all the things. And then anytime Darth Vader speaks, it's just like a threat. Like, you'll do what I want or there'll be consequences.
It's a great observation.
So I don't know. It just works for me as a comic in a way that a lot of the other comics don't work, and I've been enjoying it, and I just think Greg Pak's a really strong writer, and he's had good art consistently throughout his run. Mm-hmm. It's changed up a couple of times, and so yeah, this one issue with him fighting IG-88, who's, you know, I think the IG droids got some renewed vigor from The Mandalorian, seeing what they were actually capable of.
Yep.
So that kind of made the whole issue work for me in a way that I'm ready. I'm back. I was hesitant, and now I'm here.
If we go through this whole 85 part crossover and there's not some allusion to The Mandalorian, I will be shocked, just because of the way Disney's corporate synergy works. I realize that The Mandalorian takes place after Jedi and this is before Jedi, but still, if there's not some sort of allusion towards him, I'll be surprised.
Yeah.
And if there's not a Mandalorian comic eventually, I will also be surprised.
That would be an easy Jonah Hex style, you know, single issue. Oh, he's going to be a bad guy, but he's going to do the right thing style. It'll be a prequel.
Unless Jon Favreau has the character locked down right now, I will be surprised.
Maybe Jon Favreau wants to dip his toe into comics and a little co-write, you know, maybe co-written by Jon Favreau. And
Hellfire Gala Corner. We're reaching the end. I think maybe next week might be the last week for Hellfire Gala. So we had three books this week. We had Wolverine 13 by Benjamin Percy and Scott Eaton. We had Way of X 3 by Cy Spurrier and Bob Quinn. And we had Sword number 6 by Al Ewing and Valerio Shitty. And number one, I realize there's a checklist, but the checklist is at the back of the book. So I really wish that these issues, they all have a logo on them. They all have the Hellfire Gala logo on the cover. I really wish there was a number. And I can understand why they wouldn't want to do that, because they don't want people feeling like they got to buy them all. Maybe they'll turn you off from buying any of them. But there is a very vague order to these. And so I kind of wish I didn't read one random one and the party's over. And then I read the next one and we're back at the party. So I just, you know, the guy in me who read Superman in the 90s, and they had a little shield in the cover that tells you what order to read those books, because they were all a continuing story. It's a minor point. Wolverine 13, barely remember what happened in it. Didn't really enjoy it. Way of X 3 was interesting because it's been about Nightcrawler struggling with the current status quo of the X-Men and the hedonistic lifestyle with his religion. And in this issue, we find out the sort of dark moral side to a permanent spring break party on Krakoa is there's a lot of babies that nobody's taking care of. People just keep leaving these babies at this doorstep of this building. And so now this woman's taking care of all these babies. It's a little dark. And then Sword 6 is actually tons of fun. You know, the fallout of last week's events in which the X-Men terraformed Mars and turned it into the new sort of capital of the Sol system. In fact, this is the issue where they say we're now the capital of Sol. You know, through Sword, they talk to the alien races and say, fuck Earth, if you got a problem, Mars is where you got to come. And so they're staking their claim to the solar system via Mars. It was fun. The Valerio Schiti art was terrific. It was a great opening sequence with Cap and Dr. Doom talking through the moral quandaries of what they're seeing. And then the rest of it is a lot of more posturing from the X-Men on a galactic level. Dr. Doom shows up again and says, hey, who is the Regent of Mars? Who do I deal with here? And it turns out it's Storm. I enjoyed it quite a bit. And also, we get a bit at the end with Scarlet Witch and Magneto. And it's hard keeping track of X-Men continuity, but I guess now they're saying Scarlet Witch is not Magneto's biological daughter. But he says, you'll always be my daughter anyway. I don't know.
But wait, she's a twin. So, what's going on? Is Quicksilver not really her twin?
Apparently, Quicksilver's not really the son.
But if they retcon them not being twins, that clears up a lot of other issues that they've had over the years.
So, that's Hellfire Gal Corner. I think I got one more week. I've enjoyed my trip to this party. I've actually really enjoyed it, even though there's been some clunkers. For the most part, it was a really fun journey. So, those are the books we want to talk about this. We have the Patreon pick, patreon.com/ifanboy. You can vote to add a book to the rundown. And the overwhelming favorite was Black Hammer Reborn, number one. From Jeff Lemire and Caitlin Yarsky, colors by Dave Stewart, letters by Nate Picos. And I saw the cover and I was like, I love Black Hammer and the books. But I was like, are we really going to keep going, like finding a new way to do this again? And then I was about halfway through this and I was like, fuck, this is really good. And I texted Josh because he missed the boat on Black Hammer and never really found a way in on it. And I said, don't sleep on Black Hammer Reborn. It's a great jumping on point. They recap everything and it's sort of a new status quo. And he said, I'm not working this week. That was his response.
So now we know how Josh feels about comics. They're so, just work.
So anyway, I thought this was really terrific. Basically, it's as the title says, Black Hammer Reborn. We're establishing a new status quo. The main story ended with the daughter of Black Hammer sort of taking up the mantle, you know, as the new Black Hammer hero, becoming the hero of this city. Then this is a time jump 20 years later, and she is retired, presumably like in her 40s. She got two kids. She's got a husband who's kind of a schlub.
Yeah, her husband sucks.
Her husband sucks, and her life is just not as exciting as it once was. There's a metaphor in there.
Her husband is like DC's version of Batman, if you know what I mean.
So then, you know, the shenanigans happen, and, you know, that she feels the pull to return to her old life as Black Hammer. I thought this was great. I thought the art was terrific. There was a real strong Why the Last Man vibe to the art.
Oh, yeah. I did not see that, but you are absolutely right.
A little bit more cartoony. Really great character work. Big action sequences. Crazy design work. Because, you know, there's a lot of it's based on Kirby's designs for the, you know, the Darkseid character and things like that. I just thought this was a great. And if they're going to keep this train rolling, they found a way to make it really interesting. What did you think?
The teen daughter is clearly already highlighting as a superhero, right? Or moonlighting as a superhero?
Probably.
Because I don't think you introduced that, I think our daughter's on drugs because she's never here. It's like, well, no, she's clearly out being a superhero like you, mom.
Right.
Yeah, I just continue to love everything in the Black Hammer universe. It sold me from jump just because, I'm going to say this, Connor, because I assume you are like me in that as you've gotten older, you've realized that there are very specific story tropes that always work for you.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
A very specific story trope that always works for me is I love a story about people trapped in a time bubble where, like, the rest of the world keeps going, but they're stuck in this. And that was, like, the foundational idea behind Black Hammer was these group of superheroes that were stuck for 10 years in a farm in a time bubble. And that setup hooked me so deeply that this series, this whole universe has such a long leash in terms of what it can do to keep my interest. And it has not faltered in that. So I enjoyed this very much as well.
They keep finding new twists on it. You know, it's obviously a tribute to like Silver Age DC. Almost all these characters, except for Black Hammer, even a little bit Black Hammer, have DC analogs, although Black Hammer's a little bit Steel, but Steel wasn't in the Silver Age. It's just, it's a DC pastiche.
It's a little bit Steel, it's a little bit Thor.
Yeah.
It's,
you know, they keep finding new avenues to explore. It's got a bit of Astro City in it, in that way. It's not based on the people, but it's like...
It's hard not to compare this to Astro City.
Yep.
I love Astro City.
Yep.
Astro City taught me about world building and a love of comic books that, like, few other series have. It just doesn't come out anymore.
Right.
And so this, to me, scratches that itch. Same yeah. itch. Yeah. And it's super consistent in this release schedule. I need something like Astro City, and Astro City doesn't show up on the shelves often enough. So I get my Black Hammer fix, and I'm really, really enjoying it. And I laugh every time that it's, you know, astronomer James Robinson.
Yeah.
I can't help but just find that very amusing because it's just such a direct homage to his whole run on Starman.
Yeah.
It still manages to find ways to just feel authentic, feel very real and heartfelt. You know, I would say the best issues of Black Hammer have as much heart in them as like some of Jeff Lemire's super indie stuff, like his Essex County and his Underwater Welder. And that's a really impressive skill to be able to translate from indie comics to superhero comics. And so I think it speaks to his ability as a world builder, his ability as a storyteller, and his ability at this stage in his career to find really strong artists to work with who can, you know, translate that vision to something that still sings on the page.
So if you're someone who hasn't read any Black Hammer books, this is a great place to start because the opening little sequence gives you like a 3-page primer on the main thrust of the universe, which is the time bubble situation that Brian talked about. It gives you the recap. It gives you the Superman's origin on one page and also Superman situation, and then you know what you need to know, and then we jump 20 years later, and we don't often get the story of the superhero who has retired. You know, the middle-aged superhero who was once a badass in her 20s. This is all a metaphor for aging. That's really interesting. And again, the art from Caitlin Yarsky is just absolutely incredible. Really great character work.
Yeah.
Everyone's recognizable, everyone's believable as real people, but also superheroes. I was blown away by the art. It was really great.
I hope that dog that got sucked into the black hole is okay.
Black Hammer Reborn number one. Ratings on Black Hammer Reborn number one. Out of 5, I'm going to give it a 4.5.
My rating is higher having talked about it. I actually was a little lower on it. And I think that was unfair because I think I went into this with strong pick of the week anticipation.
Sure.
So now in talking about it with you, I like it even more. And I'm going to go 4.25.
I think I might have been my pick. I didn't make a distinctive pick because I didn't have to, but I think this would have been in the discussion for sure. So, sticking with it, are you going to read more of Black Hammer Reborn?
Yes.
And were you reading it without the patron pick?
Yes.
Yes, okay. Patreon.com/iFanboy. You can vote to add
a book. Wait, what about you?
Are yeah,
you
absolutely. Keep reading it? Oh, yeah, I read it before the pick was finalized. I'm always going to read a Black Hammer book, unless I miss it. Like, I missed the Skeleton Boy one. I had to go back because I didn't realize it was a Black Hammer book. That's all.
It's insane to me that Josh is not all over this.
He just missed it and won't go back. He's being stubborn. That's fine. When he's in traction, I'll just hold it over his face and he'll have to read it.
Perfect.
Anyone who's a patron could add a book to the rundown, but if you get the $5 or higher level, get a superpower live on the show, like these gentlemen, like Trent Deckard. It's an awesome name.
A deck officer?
Deckard. Could be a replicant. I'm sure he's heard that joke 100 million times. Or not, because well, that movie's not quite as popular as people think it is. Trent Deckard. Ryan, you know how like you're like, I'm hungry. I have this map app, and if I type a food type into it, it'll show me all the pins of where that food is. You ever do that? Like pizza.
Yes.
And it'll show you all the pizza places near you.
Sure.
Well, Trent knows where all the tacos are everywhere. He knows all the taco places. Not just like, hey, there's a Taco Bell over there. We all know that. We can see the goddamn sign. He knows the underground taco places. He knows the places where the guys are making them on a Sunday morning in East LA, and there's only food for 2 hours until it runs out. He knows all the taco places, just all of
them. When was the last time you had tacos?
Last week.
Would you say tacos are in your future? Like, are you anticipating tacos today? Is that what's going on?
I'm not anticipating them today or tomorrow, but possibly Sunday.
I've had 2 tacos today so far.
That means your day's been 2 times better than mine.
Yeah. And I'm in rural West Virginia, and I had some very good tacos from a place called Picnic Tacos in Thomas, West Virginia. And they came with beans and rice and an ample amount of hot sauce. I was a happy lunch eater.
Well, there you go.
Evan Cisneros is hopefully also happy because Evan has what I'm calling the power of the bird's eye view.
Okay.
Evan can see through the eyes of nearby birds and can issue very general telepathic messages to those birds if he's trying to help get them to investigate certain things.
Right. All right.
So if there's a bird nearby. So basically, like, if Evan can see a bird sitting over in a tree, he can then teleport his mind to see through the eyes of that bird. And then if he's like, oh, look a little to the left, like, there's a chance the bird will also look a little to the left and help him survey the situation.
That's useful. Jason Martinez is the signal booster, and we've had various kinds of signal boosting powers before, but Jason Martinez, he can physically boost a signal. So any kind of signal, from an internet, you know, Wi-Fi signal to a ham radio, cell phone, any kind of signal that happens, but he has to physically touch the thing to boost the signal.
Does it ever backfire?
Too much signal, you mean?
Can that happen?
Well, before we get to that, I will say also, he could touch a radio antenna and boost that signal. But also, Ryan, if you were on the phone and we're like, man, I only have a half a bar here, I'm really having trouble hearing, he could put his hand on your shoulder and boost the signal because you are touching the phone.
Listen, I don't want to talk too much about how I live my life, but like, maybe sometimes you say you have a half a bar.
Right.
Maybe you're trying to get off the phone.
Oh no, I have a half a bar.
Right. Oh no, I have only must be a dead spot. Yeah. You can probably get away with that
in rural West Virginia much more than you can in LA, although there are dead
spots.
Not
with his power.
No, I'm saying he can. In your general life, if we're getting into that.
Yeah, sure.
Although in LA, there are dead spots. But if with Jason Martinez, there are no dead spots.
No dead spots. Mm-hmm. The anti dead spot. I mean, clearly useful, but to the point of almost like what, you know, like, because I went backpacking the other week and it was nice to not have cell signal.
Sure.
Like, I wouldn't, like, Jason, I'm sorry, I don't want you to come backpacking with me because I don't want.
He activates the power. It's not like it happens all the time knowledge of it. Yeah.
So he's not just like a passive cell phone tower wherever he goes.
No. He has to actually concentrate and then boost the signal.
Well, Jeremiah Dunham has the power that I'm calling tuck and roll.
Okay.
Jeremiah, on his mental command, can harden his skin into a dense armor and roll up into a ball to avoid predators.
Like an armadillo?
Basically like an armadillo.
So he's the armadillo.
Here's the catch.
Okay.
He can only return his skin to normal by taking a hot shower or a bath and using a pumice lava stone to scrape off the hardened armor skin.
Does he get really big like an armadillo, or the skin stays the same size, just becomes hard like an armadillo?
Yeah, it just becomes hardened, and his backbone, you know, like, okay, so we often talk about spending way too much time reading the descriptions of the powers that various people, you know, in the secret files and all these other things. Mm-hmm. And there's always especially in Marvel, I feel like there's a lot of characters who have the ability to crouch for long periods of time without damaging their knees and spine.
Oh,
you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like Nightcrawler.
Yeah.
Right. So like, part of the power is the skin hardening. The other part of the power is he then becomes flexible enough to roll up into a ball and then roll away from whatever predator is accosting him. maybe a bird.
Does he make a noise when he rolls away?
If he chooses to.
Okay. Patreon.com/iFanboy. Thanks to Trent, Evan, Jason, and Jeremiah for being patrons. If you get the $5 higher level, get your superpower live on the show. Thanks to all who join up. Let's do a quick email. This one's from Betsy. I'm a high school teacher, grades 9 through 12, and with our students likely returning in person next fall, I'd love to add some current comics to my classroom long box. What are your top 5 current ongoing comics that might appeal to teenagers? And first of all, awesome that you have a classroom long box with comics for your kids to read. I think that's great.
The question is tough.
Yeah.
Because I tend to, like, when I think about giving a book to younger people, it seems like the model is now graphic novels for younger people, right? Or like graphic novellas.
Yeah. It's interesting because I'm looking at my list on Comixology on my app of all the books I'm reading. And I think like a lot of the books that'll probably appeal to teenagers, especially like more racially diverse characters and stories, are a lot of them are miniseries. You know, like America Chavez or Silk.
I even think like an Archie 1941 would be a good book for teens. But again, that was also a miniseries.
Right. So let's think about this. I'm looking at my...
Can I throw out just a wild suggestion?
Yeah.
How about Usagi Yojimbo?
I don't know.
Okay.
Have you lost your touch with the youth?
No, it is the children who are wrong.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
My issue is, you know, I also have a job where I have to work with younger people. And so I think I maybe come at this question from a like, liability, like to make sure we don't expose them to anything that will get me or the teacher in trouble.
That's why I think anything is safe from the big two. These are basically all ages books anyways. I'm not going to give them anything from like Image. You know, even like the Mighty Valkyries, which features the
What about like Valkyrie character Strange Academy?
Yes, okay, that's a great one. Strange Academy is a great one. That's the Marvel series about the magic school featuring a bunch of teenagers learning magic. It's sort of like a Marvel Harry Potter. I think that's a very good choice.
What about Hey Kids Comics?
That's a bad choice.
Bad choice. How about another good choice? Norse mythology.
I don't know how into that kids would be. I mean, I'm not saying you're wrong. I just don't know. I don't know anything about kids.
I gave you a bad answer. I gave you a good answer. Now I'm going to give you two surefire winners. Uh-huh. One is called Mighty Morphin. The other is called Power Rangers.
God. Possibly Marauders.
Hey, listen. Yeah. They are books about teenagers with attitude. They're rad teens, though, so it's really should be called Ratitude.
Sure. I mean, like even like Static, which came out last week, but that's a miniseries. You know, there's it would be a great book to have in the classroom. Batman and Superman aren't that great right now.
What about, like, the Thor and Loki Double Trouble book?
But that's a miniseries.
Oh, is it?
Yep. My problem is I think some of the best work overall is happening in the miniseries side of things. And, look, there are obviously great ongoings, but I don't know if I'm going to recommend Fantastic Four for a bunch of kids who have no context for the Fantastic Four. They haven't been in a movie yet that anybody's watched. They've been in other movies that no one's watched. Spider-Man is about to get rebooted. Might be a good place to jump on for the kids 3 times a month with a team of writers, including Kelly Thompson. That might be a good place to start when the Spider-Man gets rebooted. So we got Spider-Man.
I guess Basket Full of Heads was a miniseries.
What did you say before? So we said Spider-Man, Strange Academy.
Yes.
Is that it?
Mighty Morphin and Power Rangers.
I refuse to do that. There's 3 more spots to fill.
It's about teens with attitude. Ratitude. They're rad teens. And they're ongoing.
I will throw one of those if you had to pick one.
Mighty Morphin.
You get one slot. Mighty Morphin. Okay.
I said Mighty Morphin. I didn't even hesitate. Right. I did not hesitate.
Batman Superman's getting canceled. Batman Catwoman's a miniseries. Batman the Detective is his miniseries. Beta Ray Bill's a miniseries. Black Cat's, like, all these great books are miniseries.
Yeah, because I'm sure all the teens are going to be super into Beta Ray Bill. Listen, I love that book, but I cannot imagine
Black Widow?
Teenager. I mean, you're just saying that because she's in the movies.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
All right. Well, I mean, The Old Guard?
No. Maybe Firepower. Firepower's
maybe not a bad call.
Not too risque. Firepower from Kirkman and Somni. All right, that's number 4. So we have Spider-Man, Strange Academy, Mighty Morphin, Firepower, and...
I really don't know, man. I've scrolled through my list of books that I'm following a couple of times now, and I'm not...
Yeah, I mean, these are all miniseries.
Yeah.
It's hard. Maybe the Wonder Girl book, but I don't know if that's probably a miniseries, too.
I even think, like, A Man Among Ye, like, that was a fun pirate book, had some real history in it, but it's a miniseries.
Yeah.
All the Black Hammer stuff.
Oh, maybe, you know what? Maybe we can do another book looking forward, even though I'm not happy about this, but Superman's getting rebooted with Jonathan as the lead. Maybe that's a way to go.
You know what? Counterpoint. Not a counterpoint. Different thought. Guardians of the Galaxy.
Oh, okay.
It's a book that when I'm reading it, every once in a while, something bumps on me as being like, oh, this feels like a little hip for me. Right. And has been well established in this show. I'm much younger than Connor. So
hurtful.
I actually think Guardians of the Galaxy might not be a bad choice.
There you go. There's a sixth bonus book for you to try. It is a tough question because, again, I think you could find a huge amount of miniseries to put in your long box at school. If you go ongoing, it's a tougher game, I think, for kids. Contact@ifanboy.com is where you can write in for this show or for Media Explode. If you're writing in for Media Explode, please put it into the subject line. And we thank you all who do. We are always sorry we don't have time to do more. There was a time in our show life where we did 3 an episode. That time is gone. Let's do some plugs for some upcoming shows and some explanations why some shows haven't come out. So Talksplode, Tom Scioli, and Booksplode, Injustice Gods Among Us, Year One, the Complete Collection. Those are both out behind these shows in the feed. You can find them on ifanboy.com or on wherever you listen to podcasts. Those are both unlocked by the patrons. So you were supposed to have heard Media Explode this week. Here's what happened. I got sick last weekend, real sick, and so I couldn't record the show. Rather than Josh and Ron doing it without me, we decided to postpone it a week, so you'll probably hear it this upcoming week, unless I get sicker or someone else gets sick, or Josh is in traction and can't get the Wi-Fi to work in the hospital. Also, you're supposed to have Batman the Long Halloween Part 1 this week, which Ryan and I and Paul Montgomery were going to talk about the new animated film from DC. But the releases got wonky, and the rental is not for another couple weeks, so it's going to be a while for that one.
And I'll also, I barely got these comics read. Let's not push it and asking me to watch feature-length films.
Right. So you're supposed to get Meteor Splode, Sickness Happened. You're supposed to get Batman Long Halloween, weird releases that happen. So those will all come to you in July. No, Meteor Splode will come to you hopefully this week, but Long Halloween will be in July. Also in July, there'll be a Talksplode from Josh. That's his creator interview show. He doesn't know who he's talking to yet. And then in August, you'll have Booksplode, True Believer, The Rise and Fall of Stan Lee by Abraham Reisman, the prose book about Stan Lee. We've been plugging for a while, so you have time to read it. I know many of the patrons have mentioned it in the communities that they're reading it in preparation for the show. So those are the shows we've got coming out soon enough. Ryan, tell us about your show.
I do a show called Science Sort Of. You've heard about it. It's me and my friends talking about science. We usually have a beer, talk about whatever's going on in the world of science. The last couple of episodes are all interview shows. So I had some cool interviews with Carl Zimmer, who wrote about Life's Edge. So the search for what it means to be alive, Connor. You'd think being alive or not being alive would be a pretty easy question to answer, but it turns out it's quite complicated. I talked to Dr. Arik Kirschenbaum, who wrote The Zoologist's Guide to the Galaxy, so how some of the rules by which animals have evolved on planet Earth might be consistent across the galaxy, and so when we go to other planets, we might actually see things that we recognize as animals.
Interesting.
Which is cool. And then I talked with some folks that I did a science policy outreach year-long event thing that was completely disrupted by the pandemic, but we kind of review our year in doing science policy, and we talk about their science doing like listening to the ocean and mapping fires and talking to the government about science. And so those are the most couple of recent episodes for folks to go check out over at scienceworld.com.
Head over to ifanboy.com. That's where you'll find all of our old shows. You'll find a long treasure trove of comic book writing that Ryan was one of the writers on from 15 years ago. If you want to
listen, I think we established that I'm much younger than you, and this is not helping my case for you to point that out.
And you can like facebook.com/ifanboy and follow at ifanboy on Twitter and ifanboy comics on Instagram to find out what the pick of the week is before the show comes out. And individually, we are CS Kilpatrick on Instagram and Ryan Haupt on Instagram and Haupt on Twitter.
Took a great photo of a bird today.
youtube.com/ifanboy. That's where you can like and subscribe our videos. And we've been putting up the old video shows because that's what the patrons unlocked. And this past week, we put up a mini episode, which was a new comic book preview for some show in June of 2008. Those shows aren't very popular on rewatch, and I understand why. We also put up the best comics of 2009 so far, in which Josh and Ron and I went through some of our favorite books at that point in the year. And then our always fun and popular Grillin' Meat Talkin' Comics episode came out just 1 week shy of coming out right when it should have, because those were always our July 4th episodes. And so that was, assuming a fun one. I'm sure it was hot. I'm sure we ate too much food. And I'm sure we talked about comics.
And listen, I'm going to clarify. I took a great picture of a bird, but I didn't post it to Instagram yet. I'm going to text it to Connor right now while I tell you.
Well, by the time the show, people hear the show, they'll be on Instagram, will it?
I don't know. Take a look, Connor. Let me know if you think it's good enough to post. If you dig the show, write a review, leave a star rating, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your podcast. Some podcast aggregators, you just have to thumbs up the podcast, and that means you're subscribed. I don't understand it. I started podcasting a decade ago. Do whatever it is you know to do in your podcast app to help the show in a way that is free to you and helpful to us. Better yet, tell your friends. People still need to be told what podcast to listen to. Yes. Be the person in your life who lets your mom, your child, your letter carrier, the person checking out groceries. Well, don't bother them. They're working hard. But tell somebody who's not listening to something actively in the moment that they should be listening to iFanboy. Help spread the iFanboy love.
Where is the bird in this photo?
Yeah, exactly. It's a great photo.
Is there a bird?
Yeah, there's a bird. It's a plover. It's a little bit. Well, it's a baby plover, which I've been calling plovlitos, which is just me making up Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Is it right in the center?
Yeah. Okay. It's hiding behind that little plant. Their parents were being very protective, so I was having a hard time even getting this close to take a photo because the parents are like, stay away from our birds. And I understand. So there's a hawk that lives nearby.
It's a nice photo. I just don't know if people will see the bird. That's all.
Well,
we can talk about this.
You know, I guess my Instagram, if you want to follow me for advanced bird photos, follow me on Instagram. I'm Ryan.
Thanks for doing the show, Ryan. I hope Josh feels better after his bike crash. I'm Connor. Stay safe out there. We'll see you next week.
Wash your hands, get a shot in the arm, do whatever you need to do to keep everyone, yourself included, safe. You can bend but never break me, 'cause it only serves to make me more determined to achieve my final goal. And I come back even stronger, not a novice.